On FM, on DAB, and up to date on social media. We are Radio Newark. Radio Newark Sport. Brought to you with Smith's Timber Merchants. For all your fencing, decking and DIY needs on Appleton Gate, Newark. Visit smithstimber.co.uk.
Tonight, we go on an emotional journey with James Brincat Smith. And it's one that sport has proved a bit of a saviour. We also talk about what's coming up this weekend in another very, very busy weekend for local sport. But first of all, as ever, it's time to find out the local and the national headlines on the one and only Radio Newark Sport. And Southall City won an amazing local derby with Bingham Town last night to progress into the quarter-finals of the Notts Senior League Cup. 3-0 down at half-time, 4-all at full-time, 6-4 at the end of extra time, by which time Bingham were down to 8 men. 3 of them had seen red, the first of those as early as the 29th minute. Not Fast Sue and Steve Needham travelled to the US to take part in the New York Marathon alongside 50,000 other runners. Steve finished in 4:35.37 and Sue clocked in 5:35.50. Fantastic efforts from both of them. And the Newark Castle Archers attended the Foss Company of Archers WA18 World Record Status Shoot last Sunday. It sounds good. And came away with the two top prizes in the ladies' Bearbow, Joe Fleming and our friend Mandy Elson with the medals. Apparently, players involved in the European Super League will be banned from playing international football, including the World Cup, says the FIFA president. The German publication, who's going to get a mention for the second night running, Der Spiegel, claimed top European clubs have held secret talks to create a setup by 2021. The news magazine leaked the documents revealing clubs' plans to leave their national leagues and associations. The FIFA president said it was FIFA's duty to protect football. I'll leave that one to Mr. Smith to make a comment on. We've lost it now. Notts paceman Harry Gurney will head out to Australia in January to play for Melbourne. In the Big Bash, the 32-year-old England one-day and T20 international specialist will play alongside the Notts T20 skipper Dan Christian under the captaincy of Australian opener Aaron Finch. I'm really excited. I can't wait to get out there playing in front of the big crowds. And England all-rounder Ben Stokes has donated a significant sum to help the Durham under-16 side fund their trip to Dubai. As we all know, major problems at Durham, and that's what we've always said on this show. Isn't that Ben Stokes a nice man? He really is a nice man. First, before I forget, did you see the highlights from the Champions League?
No.
Right, so you didn't see Raheem Sterling's penalty?
No, but I heard about it.
Trust me, you've got to see it. I'm not blaming in any way, shape or form Sterling, because he wouldn't have known what happened. He was going that quick. But instead of kicking the ball, he kicked the ground and went over onto the floor. The referee, who was about 5 yards behind him, blew for a penalty. Well, the nearest Russian player was about the same place as the referee, to be fairly honest. My whinge, and my repetitive whinge, what was they doing that stand either side of the goal? They've got one job, to look at the game. What was they doing? It was blatantly obvious. I mean, Raheem Sterling, when he got up, looked embarrassed, and so he should be. It's not his job to say to the referee, "I'm sorry, mate, that's not a penalty." You've got a linesman, or whatever they're called these days. You've got a referee, and you've got them two behind the goal. Not one of them four saw it. That is shocking.
I just think the guys behind the goalposts in European matches are just there for, you know...
they're there to watch a freebie match.
Well, they're just there for no apparent reason. They're like Michael Jackson's gloves. You know, I mean, it's absolutely pointless.
I mean, there wasn't... It's, you know...
They don't actually do anything.
Unbelievable. And now we're going to get back to FIFA's plans to protect football. Well, if you protect football, FIFA and UEFA, get your officials to do the job right to start with.
Mm. But I mean, the idea that FIFA protects football has got to be the joke of the week. Talking of joke of the week,
oh, I thought I'll... You see it? You see this is how it's scripted.
You couldn't write that, could you? What a link.
Okay, come on, get on with it.
I've got to say thank you to our listener of the week, Chrissy Townrow, for this one. But knowing that you have your affiliations in the northeast,
this show is twinned with Whitley Bay.
Twinned with Whitley Bay. The question is, what is the difference between a kangaroo and a kangaroot? And the answer is, a kangaroo is a marsupial found in Australia, and a kangaroot is a Geordie trapped in a toilet. A kangaroot!
You've got to do the
Come
accent,
on.
Yeah, okay.
You see it?
Do you think when Hollyby Willoughby gets back from I'm a Celebrity...
Hollyby Willoughby
gets back from I'm
Is
a
that
Celebrity...
A sister?
That's a sister. I can have her instead of you.
Well, you can put it in writing.
You know, it's...
You'll have to write to Der Spiegel.
And next time, try and do the accent. Like my German accent. Der Spiegel.
Yeah. Well, you know...
Just try a little harder to get it right. Kangaroo... that's it, that's yeah. Geordie, mate.
That's a Welshman trapped in the toilet.
That's Geordie. For all our Geordie listeners, I do apologise. His name's Tony Smith. He used to be a professional journalist.
Yeah, he used to be, till I came here.
He's now a lollipop man. Says it all. Absolutely says it all. Right, special night tonight. Very special night. They're all special, but we have a new guest to Radio Nutsport for the first time, which is always wonderful. And... a cracking story to tell, Tony, so I think it's time to sit back now and listen to the life story of James Brinkat Smith. But first of all, James, welcome to Radio New Sport.
I hope you're right.
You've already seen the standards. Yeah.
Oh, you can't sing much lower than that, can you?
Exactly,
hey.
So.
the only way is up, James.
Well, you say that, don't you? Hey, if you look closely.
I worry, because that's the best joke he's ever done.
No, he does well. They do say he's got a good face for radio.
He says that. The sport is powerlifting, but there's a lot more to your story. And what I want to get at is how you got to the powerlifting. So we're going to split this into three sections.
Oh, lovely.
First of all, who is James Brinkat Smith? Are you a Newark person?
I am. I was born near here. I was born in Kingsmill Hospital. But we try to keep that a little bit quiet.
No, we don't mention it.
We must have just been passing through.
Yes.
That was all it was. And then we lived in Newark. And then for family reasons, we moved away. We moved over to the northwest to be near with my grandfather. And that's where I grew up. Grew up at school and started as a musician at the young age of 11. Walked downstairs and my mother bought me a drum kit. There you go, son. Brilliant. Just what I've always wanted. You start your lessons next week. Even better. So that was me as a drummer. And a percussionist and playing in the local county youth orchestras.
And that's always been...
That's always been there, yeah. Yeah, from a very early age.
What age did you move away then?
Well, I was three, we moved away from Newark.
So you've got no memories, really, have you?
A little bit. My very good friend, Adrian Mickey, he lived up on up in Stapleford Woods, with my auntie Kath and my uncle Gray. They weren't real aunties, but you know what it was when you're a kid. Mum worked really hard over the summer, so I used to spend my summers in Stapleford Woods. Gray was a tree surgeon. He worked for the Forestry Commission. And my summers were spent in Newark, and most summer holidays, every other half term, come on, we're off to Newark, and we'd be over here at least once a month as it was. So I was always felt like I had been a Newark lad, and the minute I had the option to be able to come back of my own accord, I travelled straight back again. And mum moved back when I was at university, and I said, well, that's it. I went down to London for a bit with my work, and as soon as I had the opportunity to, I had a little daughter with my then wife, and we moved back to Newark, and I've been in the same house ever since for the past 15 years.
Excellent stuff. The northwest, whereabouts?
Preston in Lancashire, near Chorley. I went to school in Chorley FM.
Amongst anything, amongst all these other things, he thinks he's a Yorkshireman, so he normally doesn't like Lancashire people. But
well, I did go to university in Huddersfield, if that helps.
Yeah, that's no, that's fine.
That helps, does it?
I actually was born in Headingley, two streets away from the Yorkshire ground, but grew up supporting Lancashire.
Oh, yeah.
Because Old Trafford was a far better ground and far better people in it.
Well, it was quite nice. I did like Lancashire as growing up, and in the youth Lancashire Student Symphony Orchestra, where I think that's what started my life as a musician. It was great. I made some great lifelong friends. I still, every now and then, I go out with quite a few of them, and we're still all together and going out on tour, travelling the world as a young lad with a great big bunch and group of people that we all had like minds and we all loved it all. I think that's what spurred me on until later on in life, and that's when I joined the armed forces.
We'll come to the armed forces. I want to do that on its own.
Yeah.
So we'll come to that. But school then, was school just somewhere to go to before you went off playing in the band, or did you?
It was. I didn't really enjoy it.
Seriously.
No, I just did what I had to do, and just got through it. Really, that's all I can say. It was pretty traumatic as a kid. At the age of 13, my dad got diagnosed with motor neuron disease. And sadly, 3 years later, though, we lost him. So, and that was really at the pinnacle of my school career. Dad was really ill, and just me and mum at home looking after dad. So school really wasn't on my radar of things that I had to do well at. I could go and be a musician in this fantastic orchestra that I played for, and that was fun. And I really enjoyed that, and I was excelling at that. So school was really on the back burner, and I just turned up, did what I had to do, and left. Well, I didn't play truant, but I just sat at the back, and that was me done. I'm here. What more do you want from me?
That's two out of three of us. Tony professes that he was clever.
But can I just sort of butt in here in support of James and what it is like to be in a sort of band situation? Because when I was...
there's a difference between James was playing in a band and the fact that you have been banned from being playing. There's a difference on the word, Tony.
Yeah. Sorry, move on. No, but when I was a reporter in Bradford, at the evening paper there, I was asked to go down to Wembley with a local scout and guide marching band. And I thought, God, I've got the short straw here.
Oh, I bet you had a whale of a time.
Honestly.
Band camp.
Walking.
It's all about band camp.
But yeah, but I mean, like, sort of, and we're practicing, we're marching around a car park, and the guys and girls are hammering away on the drums, and the music comes out. It was fantastic. I just loved being part of it.
As I keep telling this lot here, Tony, that's proper music.
Yeah, but it's just a great buzz, isn't it?
Yeah, like, it's just being part of the just camaraderie and the teamwork that goes into it. It's second to none, really, in any sort of musical environment.
We went down on the Friday night, and we had the competition at Wembley Indoor Arena.
You say it's we now, don't you?
We went down.
Yeah. And my band and I.
Yeah.
And, we always need someone to carry the bikes. a roadie for a scout band. Carrying the bell wires.
You didn't know you were talking Ted Sheeran, did you?
But then, like, so we had the competition on the at Wembley Indoor Arena on a Saturday. Came back late on Sunday. It was a cracking weekend. Absolutely loved it.
It is good. It's good. And especially for the youth as well.
Yeah.
It really is. It's so nice to get them all together and give them something to strive for and give them something to focus on rather than being lost like today's youth. Don't want to sound like an old man, but like today's youth sat on the Xboxes. Yeah. We don't need that sort of rubbish, do we? You know, get them out, find them a hobby.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what you did, because obviously what was going off in your life at the time.
It was an escape.
And school. That was.
Yeah.
An escape, and as we'll find out a little bit later on, sport then became an escape, a little bit later on.
We all need something, don't we?
Yeah, we most certainly do.
We certainly do.
We're going to talk to James in a couple of minutes about why he joined the army, and we're going to talk about his army career.
Oh, lovely.
Before that, though, I want to take Tony back to something that you said last night, that Bingham Town could cut it up rough.
It was quite spooky, really, to hear that's how it panned out, because, as I said, Bingham Town are a strange side. They can either out-football you, or they can kick lumps out of you and see what happens. And to hear that they were 3-0 up at half-time and then ended up with 8 men, I mean, it's...
It was actually quite spooky.
I'm thinking I'm going to go at lottery later.
I went home and said to the dear wife, Tony's got something right. But that puts Southall in the quarter-final, and Southall are on course for the not senior league double, which is something, of course, that Flowserve currently holds the two trophies sitting there. So it would be absolutely fantastic if Southall could replicate that.
It'd be nice to keep it in the parish, wouldn't it?
It would be lovely, wouldn't it? But so they're in the quarter-final.
Even if it is Southall.
be nice to Southall.
The noisy neighbours.
Right, we're going to go back to James, and we're going to talk about his army career in a couple of minutes. And straight back to our special guest tonight, James Brincat Smith. We're having a sports show thirsty special. James, there's obviously a career there for you as a musician.
Oh, massively, yeah, it was great. That's why I joined.
Why the army then?
Well, it wasn't first the army. I went to university. I was sent there by my percussion tutor at the time. He says, come on, James, go and get yourself a degree. Go and do a music degree. At Huddersfield, he sent me there. Sent me for an audition. And so I went for an audition. I failed my first audition because I was just too nervous. He just told me, just go and play and do what you do. And then they tell you what you need to get. So I went. And I went back and I said, John, I didn't get in. Oh, don't worry, I'll make a phone call. So he made a phone call. Go back again and do the same job again. So I went back in. And I then got a letter through a week later. You need 1E in music at A-level to be able to come onto our Bachelor of Music with Honours course. Thought, well, I'll have that. That's all right, isn't it? Taking on with my trend of really not being bothered about school, I thought I could achieve that. And lo and behold, I did. So I went to university. I got my degree. And I was leaving, and I was still in contact with my tutor at the time. He was the principal timpanist for the Halley Orchestra. And he says, James, and it was him and a lovely fella, Paul Turner. He used to play for the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra. At the time, they were the two of the best orchestras in the world. And they were both saying, look, come on, finish your degree and then come and play for one of ours. So John was going, I want to retire, James. You can have my seat in the Halley Orchestra if you like. I want to retire. And Paul's like, no, come to Bournemouth, you'll be all right. So I thought, that's great, that, isn't it? Great opportunity in some of the best orchestras in the world. I'll have a go at that. And at the time, John was charging my mum £45 an hour for my percussion lessons. And we're talking like 30 years ago. I was having 2 hours a week.
That was.
£90 a week my mother was spending on it 30 years ago to met me, this fantastic musician. And I thought, well, he's not doing that because he loves it, is it? He's doing it because he needs the money. And if you have a bad night in an orchestra, that's it, your career's over. So I thought, I'm going to have a look at the armed forces and have a go. I'd seen them all on the telly. My grandfather, God bless him, he loved the band of the Grenadier Guards. We always had the tape on in the car everywhere we went, some good music. And I thought, well, I'm going to give this a go. So I decided to join the Royal Air Force for some reason or another. And I ended up in the Central Band of the Royal Air Force. What a cracking band that was. I did my basic training, went to the School of Music. The first gig I did was the Royal Tournament, the last Royal Tournament in 1999 in Earl's Court. Wow, what a show. That was amazing. And I did 4 years in the Air Force, and I wasn't really settling down. I was a bit mouthy, and I'd upset a few people far too much, and there'd been a promotion ban for years because of time served promotion, and I thought, I'm not going to get anywhere here. I really am not. And a buddy of mine was in the Grenadier Guards, and he'd got over. He says, come over to us. He says, all right, and you'll get promoted in 18 months, and we've got this fantastic tour of Northern America, 9 weeks. Going around doing a show with a band of the Scottish Highlanders. He said, we're just going to be on a coach for 9 weeks, going and playing in different hockey stadiums and theatres all over the United States. And then next year we're going to Australia. Oh, yeah, I'll have that. So that was it. So I transferred and joined the band of the Grenadier Guards. And standing there with my great big bearskin and my boiling hot tunic, changing the guard at the palace and trooping the colour, beating the retreat. And I found myself in the company of 46 of the world's finest musicians. That's how it felt at the time. It was amazing. Such a great career. And we went over to Bosnia. After the war had finished, we went over to Bosnia to support the 1st Battalion Grenadier Guards. They were out there doing cleaning up duties, going over to farms and things and trying to disarm all the villagers. And that must have been horrific for some of them. They'd turn up at these farms and so I'd come on, they'd find rocket launchers under people's beds and all sorts. Yeah. And that was their job as part of the UN to try and make Bosnia a bit more safe. All these illegal, because after it all finished over there, everyone just went home. And whatever they were carrying at the time, they just took with them and just threw it in the garage or under the beds or whatever. And there was tale of this one lad, you've got to give this rocket launcher up. No, I'm not going to give it up. I'll fight you for it. The last time someone came to my house, they shot my daughter and shot my wife. No, I'm keeping hold of this to protect me. So we were out there to sort of like give them some entertainment. Felt a bit of a fraud, really. There's these boys that have been around to all these tours and seen some horrible stuff, gone out as boys and come back as real hard-faced men. But it was a great life for us. And we just travelled the world playing music, supporting the troops. and trying to raise the profile of Britain, really. Standing in front of the palace, and my photo must be all around Tokyo. It's all over the place. And that's a fantastic time. We really did, and made some lifelong friends as well. And that camaraderie as well in there, and the day-to-day routine of knowing where you were at, and everything that it brought with you. The job security was the big thing for me, knowing that I had a job for 22, 30 years if I wanted it. And I knew I'd be supported with the men around me and the girls around me, and we were all together, and everyone was in it together, and everyone really looked out for each other, and you were never on your own at all. And it was just an amazing career.
So just tell me again what you was actually playing in the band.
I was a percussionist.
You're a percussionist.
Yeah. Yeah, so we had a concert band, the military band, that would go out and do concerts. But on the march, I played the bass drum in the middle of the band as the regimental time beater, sort of semi-controlling the parade along with the captain of the guard. And it was fantastic.
And the sergeant major who was screaming and shouting. The whole of the music was coming from you.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So they'd shout and I'd bang the drum and everyone would start moving, and the job was done. It was great.
Is it? You've... We will get round to sport, Tony, trust me, but I'm on something I love here, and that's military band music. Which is more difficult, the military band music or the concert
band music? It's all the same, really.
But you've got to march as well, haven't you? You've got to do it in time. I mean, it is precision movement.
Oh, it certainly is. In that field, it certainly is. And the household division are some of the finest in the world at it. They are great. But it's just your job. And you just get on with it. Everything's difficult. Everyone just, you've got to look at most people in life and think, that must be hard. But the trick is to make it look easy. And that was our life, and that's what we did. We were trained to do it. We were trained to do other things, should anything sort of happen. We weren't just bandies running around like Baldrick running out at the back of Blackadder. It wasn't quite that much. We had a role. We were nuclear and biological and chemical warfare cleaner-uppers. So we had to train for that. So if anything really horrible happened, we'd have to go out and try and clean up and be in support of that. But I first joined up, we were field medics, so we all had to go and get field medic training.
This is not honestly meant to be a stupid question, but this is me. Do you regret not being on the front line at all in the army? Because you joined the army for the band first and foremost.
Well, I did, yeah, and I joined to try and make a difference as well, and see how we went along the way. I remember when I went to go and sign up, my mum came with me. He's not going to war, is he? He'll be safe, won't he, in the band? He'll not go to war, will he? No, love, he won't. He went, don't be so stupid. He said, of course you will, you'll end up going somewhere. And some of my colleagues were in the first and second Iraq wars and saw some horrible things and were involved in doing some horrible things, and they'll not be able to recover from the things that they had to do. But no, well, we were lucky. I was very lucky, really. I felt a little bit like I sort of wanted to be. We did get to volunteer, and we were put on standby a few times to go out and do things. But I think because of the elite front line that we were as the face of London, really, then the guards, the foot guards bands were the last to be sent anywhere because we had another job.
Now we get to the time that you're coming out of the forces, you've decided enough's enough. You was 11 years there, so it was that 12 year thing when you can come out, I suppose.
Yeah.
But like other guests that we've had on this show, you too found it difficult, and you too was diagnosed with clinical depression.
I was, yeah.
Now, people will probably say, well, he was never on the front line, so he never saw anything. But that's not the case, is it? It's the transition in lifestyles.
Yeah, getting back to normal, as they call it. I don't even know what normal is. It's a strange word, isn't it? It's so subjective. But no, so you come out, and I think for years, I think it's only taken me in the past couple of years to be able to go on holiday without taking every piece of clothing because I didn't know what to do. Paying for excess baggage, because I wasn't given a packing list and I didn't know how to cope. And it's just the little things like that, which sounds so stupid. That does sound stupid, that you don't know what to take on holiday. You know where you're going. Why can't you take... Why? You're only going for a week. You only need 7 pairs of pants. Why do you have to take 20? Because you never know, you might get stuck there. Don't be so stupid. But no, just the day-to-day things like that was really difficult. And when you come out of such a big unit, there's 46 of us in our band, part of five regiments of foot guards in London. We worked all together. Well, you look at the Trooping of the Colour, there's in excess of 300 bandsmen and musicians and pipes and drums on that parade, and you're all working together, and everybody is together. And when you leave, you're on your own, Billy. And that's it. There's nobody left. And yeah, you do remember people. You do make lifelong friends. And you go back every now and then. I went back this year to watch the troupe. And I went to the pub afterwards with them all. And it was like we'd never been separated. But once you've left, you're on your own. And that's it. And there's nobody out there looking after you. Or nobody out there looking out for you. And you go to get a real job. And once you've got a real job, it's suddenly, it's not acceptable to be like you were in there. And you feel like a bit of an outsider, really. I was ever so lucky, I managed to take over the family business, which was good in a way, but also it had its curse, because it meant that ultimately I was on my own, and I just couldn't cope with that at all. I couldn't cope with that, from going with such a big unit with such great support to then being on your own and feeling like you've lost everything, even though I did it voluntarily. It was just really difficult, just the day-to-day life.
And to get him out and about and back on track, he turned to sport, and that's what we're going to talk about after we've had a quick look at what happened last weekend. And we had victories for Newark Flow Surf and Collingham at football, but a bleak weekend for the rugby and the hockey clubs. The hockey ladies took the lead at the University of Nottingham, but then conceded 8. Farndon Colts lost for the first time since the 29th of April 2017. Amber Owens finished 6th in the Carolina Conference Cup at Mount Olive. See, I can talk American now. And in doing so, won the Freshman of the Year trophy. 19-year-old Tom Watkins was the star of the night for Newark Amateur Boxing Clubs in their home event, even though he lost what turned out to be the most controversial fight of the evening. And the Newark Tennis Club ladies got off to a winning start in the Winter League with a victory over Cornton. What's coming up this weekend? We'll tell you soon.
This is Radio Newark Sport.
So you found yourself out of the army, James. That was your decision. So,
yeah.
But the fact is,
I need to be at home, you see. I'd, the armed forces for a married man is great, but it's also a curse. And I met my then wife, the mother of my daughter, in the armed forces. And halfway through, we went our separate ways. So my daughter was torn. Her mother was still in the Royal Air Force, and she still is now. And I was in the army. We're both away so much, so I needed to be home. So that was my reason for leaving. I needed to be home for Ella. And somebody needed to be stayed there. So I felt like I had a reason to leave. But it was hard. Just day to day was hard. But I knew I was doing it for a purpose, which sort of made it okay, really. And but yeah,
you was, as we said, diagnosed with clinical depression. How did the army help you with that, or did they help you? And how did you get out of it?
Well, I don't. You hear so much about soldiers and people in the military struggling and not getting any help when they came out. But part of getting help when you come out and saying that you need help is admitting that you do need help in the first place. And as a man, you're not allowed to be depressed, are you? You're not allowed to feel suicidal or anything like that, because it's not a very manly thing to do, is it? And society doesn't accept that, or you feel like society doesn't accept it. Well, it didn't do years ago. The old statement, well, just man up, will you, is so often said, so then you don't feel like you can do anything about it. I'd gone through another couple of failed relationships because I just couldn't cope. I was just pushing people away. When you feel like you haven't got anything, the best thing you can do is make sure and be under control of making sure you've not got anything, and that was that. And I just sat there one Christmas, and I was just going in the downward spiral all the time. The forces are great. They look after you when you're in, and there's a big drinking culture within the armed forces. We'd turn up to a job and we'd all have a few pints and we'd go and do what we do, and then we'd all have a few beers afterwards. And then when I left, I thought, I'm not going to drink as much when I leave, it'll be fine. And then it just got out of control. I was seeing myself in the world's greatest pub, Just Beer. I still go there every day now. I go in at 5 o'clock most days, I'll have a pint and then I'll go home. But I was finding myself in there far too much, as if to say I could pay the rent here myself for you guys, and it was a downward spiral, and life revolved around alcohol. I wouldn't say I was an alcoholic, but I would really refer to myself then as maybe as a functioning alcoholic. I'd get on with what I needed to do during the day. I managed to run our business and do everything else, but everything was hard. You'd be the life and soul of the party, but you get home and you'd be exhausted. And it just got to Christmas and I thought, I've had enough now. I'd put on so much weight, I was so out of condition, looking back on what I used to be. And I was watching World's Strongest Man on telly, and I've always watched that. I've always been mesmerised by it as a child. It's Christmas viewing for so many families, isn't it? So I watched it and I thought, I'm going to have a go at that. In the new year, that's it. I'm going to have a go at Strongman. I've always been relatively pretty strong. I'm going to have a go at it. It can't be hard. Stupid people do it. And that was my mindset. It turns out it is hard and they're not stupid. It is hard. It's really hard. So I went to the gym and I went to LA Fitness and I got chatting with this lad. He said, yeah, I can train you a little bit. It'll be fine. And I was doing it. I thought, I'm not really getting anywhere. I'm not that happy. I'm not really sorting it out. And then I went over to Code Fitness and I got chatting with a young lad called Ollie Driver. He was an ex-powerlifter and he started training me. And after about 6 months, I thought, well, I'm quite like this. Quite like this. My squat was improving. My bench wasn't very good at the time. It was getting steadily better and my deadlift was improving. And I thought, I'm going to have a go at this. And that really has. The regimented of the training, that's what really appealed to me. It is a very regimented training regime, and you've got to do it, your numbers have got to be right, and everything else is about it. It's an all-encompassing sport, and it's so open to everybody, any age, any weight, whatever you are, anyone can have a go at it, and that's what really attracted me to it. And Ollie was fantastic. He was a great trainer. I thank him for... He got me started in powerlifting. He used to lift. He won the All England one year. He says because everyone else failed, but it doesn't matter. He was the best man on the day, and that's all that counts. And so that's what got me started. And I had a little bit of a lull in it all, and I was thinking, oh, what am I doing this for? I said, well, come on, let's have a crack at it. Let's go and do... let's have a go at competing, shall we? Because you hear all this. Oh, what are you doing? Oh, I'm bodybuilding. Yeah, you're not, mate. You're lifting weights in a gym, aren't you? You're not bodybuilding. You're not a bodybuilder, so you step on a stage in your tighty-whities and do everything else that everyone else does. And I had a buddy at the time, and he was going, oh, yeah, in my day, when I was powerlifting, I was lifting a lot more weights than you were. I said, oh, yeah, good on you, Neil. Good on you, mate. Yeah, well done. So then, what were you with your platform PBs? Oh, I never competed. I never competed. I know you're surrounded by these sort of people that make out they were doing it all. I thought, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. So I had a go. 2016, I had a go. In, I think it was the 16th of April, I think it was. I went over to Horncastle and entered my first British powerlifting divisional event. And it went all right, you know. It turns out I wasn't that bad at it. And Ollie came over and coached me for the day. And on that day, I took three divisional records. I thought, it's all right, this, isn't it? I might carry on at this. It is hard. And you don't have to be stupid, you have to be really clever. And but it's great. And the people I met there were fantastic, such lovely people. And it's the only sport in the world that I think that is this mentality. A very good friend of mine, Kelly Fasey, at the 2017 British Championships, she pulled her last deadlift and she'd won. That was it. She was going to be crowned winner. And then Sarah Marsden stepped up and she put a weight on that bar for that deadlift. Had she have got that, she was going for a personal best. She just loaded the bar, knowing that if she pulled it, she would then win the British Championship. And the person screaming the most for her in that crowd that day was Kelly Fasey, because she wanted her to do it. And she'd have lost a lot then. That's it. She wouldn't have been British champion. But she wanted her to do it, and everybody wanted her to do it. And that whole love and camaraderie... I felt like I was back in the army again.
I was just about to say that. You found a family again, haven't you?
Yeah. That was it. A family of people who just look out for each other and love each other and want to aid each other to really, really strive and just be happy and be great at what they do and excel. And that just, it just got me hooked. Really did. Such an amazing environment to be in.
Just quickly then, for people like me and Tony that don't understand sport, powerlifting, we all saw weightlifting, powerlifting. Is that the same thing?
No, no.
Right.
No. I mean, most people will understand what weightlifting is, and they'll see those doing a snatch and clean and jerk on the telly of the Olympics, right. Won't they?
Yeah.
And breaking their arms as they do, and that is one hell of a sport. That is, you've got to start so young and you've got to be so flexible. But that's not what we do as powerlifters. We've got three main disciplines. We've got, first off, you've got your squat, your bench press, and your deadlift. That is powerlifting. Three disciplines within a full power meet. And then you've also got your people who just do bench only. So you've got bench press competitions as well.
So they do specialise in each discipline?
Well, no, it's only bench press.
Right.
So you can specialise in bench press, or you can do all three. That's your choice. So I started off doing all three. And it's good. It's so good.
You know, Tony, I don't think there's a night goes past in this show when we don't learn something.
Every day's a school day, isn't it?
If you add our two sports up, we've been banging on about sport for about 100 years between us, if not more. Yet we still learn things.
But no, it's just the way that James is putting it across, because it is just, it's inspirational. You know, you sort of sit here, and it's lovely the way that you say the depression came on, even though it was your own decision.
Yeah.
Because I, in the programme on Saturday, wrote a piece about the fact, you know, that I went into a dark depression when I left the Advertiser after 25 years. Basically, even though it's my own decision to take voluntary redundancy, it's still a number of weeks that I wouldn't want to wish on anybody.
No, you can't.
And the thing that got me out of it, because it is the... difficult to describe, really, but I mean, it's not, you know, stepping down from a sort of position of great sort of, you know, an army situation or anything, but it was just what I did, and suddenly it wasn't there anymore.
Yeah, when it's not there, you're sort of like grieving. It's a process of grief.
Very much so.
And if you can't process that, then you're just spiralling. Yeah. It's just so dark.
But because, without going into too many details about the company, because the money wasn't great, I did it for love.
Yeah.
And because I'd been there so long, I was growing up, I grew up with families, you know, I was writing about people's kids that I used to write about when they were kids. And it was just all that was taken away.
Yeah.
But it was just sort of, I got out of it through the great sort of work from my family and friends, and then basically I turned to golf, and I was on the golf course.
And golf turned the other way.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't want to know me, but I was on the golf course one Monday morning feeling thoroughly depressed, and then said to myself, I was on my own, and it was 9 o'clock, and I was on the first tee at the Orchards Golf Club, and I thought, there's a bit of a crosswind here, do I need a 5-iron or a 6-iron? And then I stood back off the tee and said, you silly so-and-so, what sort of decisions have you been making for the last 33 years at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning? Come on, snap out. And that's the way I got over it.
Right, I've got to make a decision, and that's to press a button, because after we've done that, we're going to talk about what's happening this weekend, and then we're going to talk about the 11th of October, and we're going to find out why that is so important. I'm absolutely fascinated by James's story, but so we're going to go very quickly, Tony, through what is happening this weekend. Okay.
Clipston away.
Yes, I know. The last time New York Flow Surf played at Clipston, they won 3-2 in the Notts Senior Cup in what was Gary Breeden's second match for the club. The Grantham ace scored the first, the second, and the third of his 180 goals for the Works. Now, the current lads up front are a different type of player to Bree, but Kingy, Sam and Tyser are all capable of reaching Bree's magical standards, and it'd be very nice if they did so to a long way on Saturday afternoon.
And the great thing is that all three lads are just as good a blokes as Gary Breeden. Absolutely smashing lads.
Well, that's okay.
All four of them. Brilliant.
We need to keep an eye on Selston. They entertain Ingalls, and Sherwood travel to Gedling in the other matches right at the top. At the top there, so come on, Ingalls. I can't see Gedling doing anything, but you never know. It's a trip to Scunthorpe to play Appleby Frodingham for Collingham in the Central Midlands. Newark Town have a day off. The match to watch in the Central Midlands, of course, is the Retford Derby at Cannon Park. Retford United playing Retford.
Oh,
so that should be fun.
If only we could find it, we could go watch it, mate.
Yes, we did do very well at finding that, did we?
You was the sat nav, as I recall.
Oh yes.
Rugby,
it's not what I got called on the night.
And let's hope a cup weekend can drag Newark Rugby Club out of their poor run. A trip to Spalding is on paper very winnable, but Spalding division lower, but they are third in the table, having their best season for an awful long time. Poor old Rob Wardman still remembers when they went out there last time, and Spalding got their only victory of the season again, and it was against Newark. And Rob, as he keeps telling us on a Monday night, has never forgotten. The hockey club will be looking for a collective bounce back. The ladies' ones are at home to Loughborough at midday. And before that, though, there's the much-anticipated league match between the ladies' twos and the ladies' threes. So that should be fun. I'm not into that at all in the same division, but nope, that's the way it is. The Colville 10K for our runners. The third round of the Cross Country Mini League at Mansfield. Remember, that's an afternoon start at Mansfield. They're talking about closing Berry Hill Park, you know.
Are they?
Yep, it's up for closure. I'm going to build on it to what they're going to do, but it's up for closure. I mean, it's iconic sporting area in Mansfield.
That was always the place to be seen at as an athlete, wasn't it?
Exactly, and they're on about closing it. It's Cup Day, talking to Mansfield, for the rugby club under 18 girls. They play away at Mansfield. It's a league format, so it's not the be all and end all, but it is the be all and end all if you play in Mansfield. and finally, back to football, and the last word on what's happening this weekend will lead to RHP, because they are in the All England Sunday Cup and they travel to the Black Horse at Redditch. Probably knowing RHP, it will literally be the Black Horse at Redditch. But whatever the score, whatever the result, I guarantee you one thing. It'll be a cracking day out.
That they won't remember.
That they won't remember a thing about, and they will get back at some stage.
But on Tuesday.
Another busy weekend of sport, don't we? And we wish them all, the hockey club and the rugby club, really have got to get back to winning ways. It's so desperately important. It's so desperately important that Flosay have come back from Clipston, who got beat last night, by the way, 8-1 by Eastwood. Come back with there for 3 points. They cannot afford to drop any more silly points. They've got to get 3 points, as simple as that. And so have Collingham, because if they're going to keep the pressure on Clay Cross, they've got to go to places like Scunthorpe and win. It's funny, isn't it? It seems like it's a pressure match for everybody. We're only in November.
But we're only in November, but already a third of the season has gone in terms of football. So,
I'm moving into cricket mode, because tomorrow night I've been invited to the South Notts Village League cricket presentation evening.
Have you?
Yes, one is a special guest.
I take it they've not got an umpire of the year, because I didn't get a letter.
No, I think when they give the umpire of the season out, Tony, they actually do it for the whole season, not for the first half dozen games before somebody runs off to football. Touché?
Yeah.
Thank you. Fair
cop. Harsh but fair.
Yeah, harsh but fair. But yeah. People talk about depression. I have to work with you. The 11th of October saw James's fourth appearance for Great Britain. You've played in arguably the best military band in the world, so you're representing your country there. So I suppose it's... was nothing new for you, really, was it?
Oh, no, it is.
It is, because you're on your own. You're on your own. You're on that platform. You're on your own. But you're not on your own.
James, I'm sorry to interrupt. What you did in that band, if you'd made one wrong move, the rest of that band's out. The timing's gone, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that doesn't happen, does it? We don't do that, eh? I made a mistake once. My sergeant major came running down the back of the band, tore me a new strip, and that was me done. I didn't do it again.
I'm so glad you said strip.
Anyway, I tried.
Okay, we're down to 10 minutes. I told you it was going quickly.
Well, there you go.
Tell me about October the 11th.
Oh, it was a great time. I went over with Mum. I took my Mum. Bless her. She always... she's generally away when I'm competing at national or whatever, and she gets to watch it on YouTube. And my beautiful daughter Ella, she'll come over to Nanny's and they'll watch it on YouTube afterwards. And since I've started lifting, I've got myself a girlfriend. Oh, she's lovely, me Julie. So Julie normally comes with me, and she is quite possibly the greatest support any man can ever have. I don't do anything at home. I just cook my meals and that's it. And she runs around after me like an absolute trooper, because it's really important that I need to do what I need to do. That's what she says. She's my support crew. But this time I took my mum. Julie travels around the world with me. We've been to South Africa this year. We've been to the Czech Republic. And she said, I think your mum would like to go with you. She'll look after you this time. I said, okay. I mean, you're not on your own when you get there anyway. I've got a most fantastic coach, Mark Giles, and he's the British bench press manager, and he runs Horncastle Powerlifting Club, world-renowned in tiny little Horncastle. Everyone sees it as somewhere to have a wee or fish and chips on the way to Skate Vegas, don't they? But I tell you, it is the centre of powerlifting, Horncastle Powerlifting Club. It's absolutely amazing. So we're all over there. So I went over with Mum in Luxembourg City, it was held, and with the British bench press team, British equipped bench press team. Mark Giles was looking after us. I had a great buddy of mine, Dean Bowring, he was assistant coach. And we're all out there, the team were out there, and we were going to go to lift at the European Equipped Bench Press Championships. And it goes on all week, and I was lifting on the 11th of October. And it was a great concert. It was a great, really was a great event, really held well. So I just went on. I went out there, seeded number 6 out of 6. In my weight category. And it's like coming in here at the beginning. The only way was up from there, wasn't it? After your joke. So I thought,
it can't have been that bad.
Well, I don't know. That's how it felt.
I'm with James.
No, I was on about the competition. No,
it was a bit better than that poor effort earlier. So I turned up seeded number 6 out of 6. So there was no pressure. There's no pressure at all. So you get nominated by your country to go out. You've got to win a championship and qualify in the first place. So you get nominated to go out, and then people wheedle out, and they end up with a hot list of who's left in the competition at the end. And you all turn up and do your best. So that's what we did. We turned up. It was a nice day. And it's such a technical sport, really. It's not just about lifting a bar while you're letting your back, bringing it down and pushing it back up again. It's such a technical sport. There's three judges watching you, and with a red or white light. You need two white lights to get a lift in, and there's judges sat on a jury panel. So if you get two red lights, you can appeal it, and the jury will look at it. They might overturn it, and you might be all right. So there were six of us, and we went on there. I failed my first lift. It was appalling. I just didn't do very well at all. I think I moved my feet, or was a little bit of downward movement on the bar, but something the referees weren't happy with it, so that was that. But my head wasn't really in it at all. And for some reason, I felt really nervous. I think it was because Mummy was there. Sat there looking all proud, thinking, great, thanks, Mum. And then I went on, got my second lift, and that was great. So I came in, got my second lift in. I think I got 210 kilos I bench pressed for my second lift. And it felt all right. The bar felt really light, and it was all good. I looked up the scoreboard. There's six of us in my category, and there's only two of us that's got a lift in so far. And also, second, you get three attempts. And the biggest lift that you do goes forward, and whoever gets the biggest lift wins. So we're there. So there's 12 people. There's been 12 lifts already in my category, and only two of us have got a lift in out of the 12. I thought, well, that's all right, isn't it? Right. So I said to my coach, he says, so it goes on. It's not up to a lifter what they do on that platform. You've done all your work. I just go and I get put, right, sit down there, do that. And you're just like in this little zone, and you get people that are handling you to make sure that you're all right. And they sort your lifts out, and your coach is there. Mark Giles, he's such a genius, that bloke. People don't realise that it's not all about the lifter. It's all about a team sport. And there is, it's all about teamwork. I've got a chiropractor up in Doncaster, ITRM Clinic. They're probably listening now. His wife, Sally, she works, she's like the PA and the woman that you go to. Sally, I need Aidan's help, please help me. Yeah, I'll sort it, don't worry. But I go and see him on a regular basis. He's on my team. I've got GH Porter's Provisions. They supply me this great coffee and then all this lot. And I've got so many people around me. Chiropractors, food, butchers, and everyone else. And then you've got your family as well. And then you've got your coaches. You've got your team players. I train every Sunday over at Horncastle. You've got your team that you coach with there. So you're there. But by the time you get there, you're just you on your own, and everyone's around you helping you out. So then, well, we just took something on the bar. Dean said to Mark, give him a weight that he hasn't done before. Go on, let's go for a personal best. So he put 225 kilos on the bar. And I'm sat there, I'm thinking, well, I've done all right so far. We're doing okay. there's only two of us got to lift it. I could be in with a medal here. We'll see how it goes. So then I go out, I get my bench press, I get my 225 kilos. Blimey, you could have put another 15 kilos on it. I'd have lifted it on that day. That's just how I felt on the day. And then went round and sat out at the front. And the bloke, the team manager from the Finnish team, came running over to me, slapped me on the back. He said, "You're going home with a medal." I said, "I am not." I said, "There's another five lads in my category to lift yet. We'll see how they go, shall we?" So I'm sat there, and it's been the longest half an hour, 5 minutes of my life. And that was it. A lift went by. Oh, that's fourth. A lift went by. Blimey, I've got a bronze medal. Good Lord, I've got a silver medal. And that was it. Silver medalist. And
was it good Lord?
Well, it was. No, it wasn't.
It's not 9 o'clock next show.
It wasn't. There was quite a few expletives, but there wasn't really on the day. Because if you start swearing, you're allowed, you get kicked out and get disqualified.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's such a family sport as well. My daughter started lifting. She's 14 next year, so she can start. She's got her first competition in November next year, hopefully. Yeah. It's so accessible, this sport, that anybody can do it of any age.
Next time you come in, you bring your daughter then.
Oh, yeah, Ella will come. She'd love it.
Good stuff.
Yeah,
I walked on the jokes.
I think she's got a few better than you have.
And the colour of the medal?
Silver.
A silver medal. Fantastic.
Silver medal came back.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it's my second medal of the year.
We're
great.
Running out of time quickly, but what I want to do is, you've said on numerous occasions, it's not a single man's achievement.
No, it's not.
There is a team behind you. So in the 2 minutes you've got left, tell me who that team is.
Well, the main team manager has got to be Julie, my partner Julie. She's so good.
Yeah, that's a team.
She does everything for me. My mum.
That's another team.
The people that work for me, they're great. You've got Horncastle Powerlifting Club, Mark Giles over there. You've got my chiropractor, Aidan Robson. He's so great. He treats people around the world. People go from around the world to see him. He's so good. Oh, my mate, a good man, Tom at GH Porter's. He does the most famous, amazing coffee. He just sorts me out there. I've been nipping into Kitchen 52. They help me for the meal prep every now and then.
They was in last week.
Yeah, they were, yeah. I've got a clothing brand, Wellbutt Apparel. They supply with me a bit of clothes. SBD Apparel, they're amazing. They're a great company to work with, and they sponsor the British team. No, but we're doing really well. I've got loads of people. And Nuta, coming up, we've got Future Fit Training. Next week, I go and do my Level 3 PT course, just in time to open up my own powerlifting facility in Sutton-on-Trent.
And we always mention, James, because no single sports person, even a sports team, are on their own. There's a background, and that's why we mention those people, because without those, you wouldn't have a cat in hell's chance.
No, I wouldn't be able to do what I do without my fantastic team behind me.
It just would not have worked.
Not at all.
You've come an awful long way, my friend.
Oh, I forgot to mention Just Beer.
Of course.
Then let me go in at 5 o'clock every night and moan about the world.
You've come an awful long way since the dark days of 2013.
I have, and your future's really bright. And we've got a lot of good plans, and I think we're going to be good. We really are. And trying to spread the word of powerlifting, it saved so many people, and it can save even more. And anybody can have a go. Anybody can have a go. It's so accessible for anybody.
Well, next time you come in, you can tell us about how to do it. A bit more of the...
I certainly can.
And bring the daughter.
I'll bring Ella. She'd love to come.
And she can tell us about it as well. Tony, I told you it was going to be fascinating, and fascinating it has been.
Absolutely brilliant.
It's absolutely brilliant. James, I can't thank you enough.
Thank you. It's been good.
Wonderful. We've really, really enjoyed that one. Next week, Libby Johnson's coming to see us. Remember, she went out to New Zealand representing the England youth in the indoor cricket. Libby's coming to see us. And I went to see Long Bennington Football Club, the juniors, when they played Farndon a couple of weekends ago. They're coming in the studio to see us, so we're going to find out all about what's happening at Long Bennington. All the news from the weekend, all the gossip, as we start a new week on Monday with the weekend wrap. But from James, from Tony, and from myself, bye-bye.
Excellent.